Welcome to Know Your Risk Radio on 97.3 Cairo FM and AM 770 KTTH. Know Your Risk Radio is hosted by Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Know Your Risk Radio is brought to you by Bulwark Capital, helping families navigate the ever-changing and often volatile markets. Know Your Risk Radio starts now. Here's your host, Zach Abraham.
And we are back. Thank you so much for joining us. Well, and by joining us, I mean it. Our 770 audience is already here. They arrive early for the most scintillating hour of finance radio. And we got a show for you today. I'm pumped. We're going to be joined shortly. Actually, next segment, going to be joined by Bill Fleckenstein, fabled money manager. Extraordinarily prescient, I guess the best way to put it is extraordinarily prescient work as it relates to the housing market. And I teased this to when we first started here with our 7-7 audience. Bill wrote a book called Greenspan's Bubbles and how the next one that was going to be impacted and collapse and create a bunch of issues for everybody was the real estate bubble. And that book was released in January of 2008. So everybody knew that the real estate collapse was coming. They just forgot to tell us, right? And as a guy that was bearish real estate during that time, we did not have an understanding of how metastasized the problem was into the banks. But we essentially got out of the markets in September, October of 2007, somewhere in there. No, maybe it was early November because I think it was the week leading up to Thanksgiving, if memory serves. But truthfully, there was some luck to that. And I've told many of you that I've met with that, you know, it's not something I'm bragging about. We just thought that the markets, you know, valuations and market had shot up and things were overcooked and real estate was going to hit it. So we just kind of pulled off the gas pedal and sat in U.S. government bonds for the next 2 years. And that ended up being a phenomenal move. Guys like Bill even took it a step further, right? He didn't participate in that trade, but, you know, they were out there parroting or, you know, talking about this stuff, loudspeakering this stuff as early as 2006. So I love to listen to guys with track records rather than guys that talk about their track record and there's no public record of it, like me, right? I could be making that story up. I'm not. But it's just hard to know who to trust because they're, oh, yeah, I saw it coming. You know, it's, oh, okay, well, I was there. And if you saw it coming, why was everybody panicking, right? So that's why Bill is a valuable voice. Plus, he's got a phenomenal track record. Let's see. One time he was on our show. This was amazing. He shorted Apple at $230 a share a few years back, and he told us on the show that he'd done it. And over the next 4 months, that's when Apple dropped to like $150. So, I mean, you know, he's had wrong ones like everybody else, but he really knows his stuff. And he gives it to you straight, too. He doesn't pull any punches. So I just love having Bill on. So we're going to be joined by him shortly. But let me give you what we're going to focus on. What I'm going to direct Bill to is this situation in China. At first glance, guys, right, it's a flu. It's going around. You know, we're so used to media sensationalizing everything that I think all of us, hopefully, myself included, you know, approach this with more of a prudence. You know, hey, let's wait and see. Right. Let's see. I'm not going to, you know, the sky's not falling. We're not going to Chicken Little this thing. All right, let's see where it's going. I'm going to switch things up today. I'm going to tell you that sensationalism is not at all happening. What is happening is we are not hearing the severity of this issue. And I'm going to explain to you why I think that is an existential threat to markets. And I'm going to do something on this show that I've never done before. I'm not going to issue financial advice. I can't do that. I don't want to get in trouble with regulators. I'm not going to try to turn this into a marketing thing to get you to call us. What I am going to do is I'm going to tell you whether you talk to us or whether you do this on your own, I think now is a very good time for you and friends and family to execute prudence. If you've had great runs in tech and all these other things, de-risk the portfolio a little bit. Okay, take some off the table. Now is a time to act with prudence, and I'm going to explain to you why. I am not worried about the short-term economic impacts of coronavirus on companies' earnings. Okay, company earnings are going to get hit. Many of these companies have already issued profit warnings. To this point right now, the U.S. market hasn't cared because it has this attitude that the Fed's got our back, that they're going to print over any problem. Well, guess what, guys? We are finally facing an issue that money printing doesn't fix. Okay. More importantly, this could be, we do not predict, right? But what I'm telling you is my fear is not the coronavirus. My fear is the domino effect this has on China. And I'll explain why. China is the greatest debt experiment in human history. Everybody focuses on the $23 trillion in debt that we've got. The Chinese economy has amassed $40 trillion worth of debt over the last 9 years. Okay, it's the greatest debt experiment of all time. Every time there's an issue, every time there's a bankruptcy, the Chinese government just prints more money. And they're doing what the Fed is doing, but they're doing it on steroids. Okay, issuing credit right and left. You know, to call it a bubble really isn't fair. Because it's a completely artificially created market that is reliant on one thing, that's currency stability. They can get away with their way of doing things as long as their currency is stable. Okay, but every day that goes on, just like any other Ponzi scheme, right? Nobody ever talks about the Ponzi scheme that made the guys a lot of money and then they gradually pared it down over time and exited successfully, right? That's not what happens. And a debt scheme like China's running is very similar to a Ponzi scheme. You can keep it up as long as the inflows of outside capital are sufficient. Okay, well, what's happened to China in the last year? Tariffs pinched off global inflows of capital, right? But you've got that swine issue they've had that's infected somewhere between, 70, 80, 90% of the pig population in China, which is important because that's the number one meat that they consume. You've also got that army bug or army weevil. Pinecone Macro was talking to us about that, that is decimating, you know, and has decimated many, you know, big portions of their soy production there. Now, those two things are inflationary, right? Make the prices rise of pork and soy and all these other things. The tariffs make the prices rise, right? Now, you've got this issue hitting. And I just got off the phone with a global logistics manager from Microsoft, and he told me that the media is drastically underplaying this, that this is having a massive impact, and said, quote unquote, this is like watching a car wreck in slow motion. No idea how far it's going to extend. And one of the most interesting things he said is this is the straw that broke the camel's back. Meaning we're aware of the human rights issues. We've been planning on diversifying our sourcing, but this issue has pushed it over the ledge. We are moving sourcing away from China and we are not going back. Not total, but and he goes, it's not just us, it's everybody else. Everybody else is like, this is it. We can't. This is too much single country risk. What does that mean? That means less capital flows into China. Right. And that's key because they've been using that foreign reserve. They've been using those foreign currency inflows of people sourcing everything in China to support the valuation of yuan, their currency. And they've been able to hold the value of their currency stable, which allows them to play this money printing, money issuance game. But just like any other Ponzi scheme, when those external flows of capital get choked off or get restricted, that's when the problems start. And let me tell you guys, what this will lead to eventually is a banking crisis in China and probably a currency devaluation. If those two things happen, remember, China's been the number one growth engine of the global economy and constitutes 80 to 90% of the growth plans of most of the S&P 500 companies. Okay, if these things come into play and the Chinese currency comes under pressure and you see a banking crisis in China, which is inevitable. I don't know when, but it is inevitable. The tidal wave felt around the world will be massive. It will be massive. The knock-on effects are impossible to predict, but this is the first real existential threat I have seen to this economy and this market advance in the last 10 years. And we're going to get into more of it with Bill Fleckenstein, who's coming on with us. And we will talk more directly about this, but this is the first time. Execute caution. We've had a phenomenal run. If you don't know how to do that, you can give us a call, 866-779-RISK. You can go to the Radio Show Roadshow or the Know Your Risk Radio Roadshow that's coming up next Saturday, 10 a.m. at the Bellevue Hyatt. Go to knowyourriskradio.com, bulwarkcapitalmanagement.com. Call us at 866-779-RISK. Reserve your spot. It's free. We are running out of space. Got tons of people signed up for this thing. And I don't think the timing could be better. So anyway, we got to go to a quick break before our interview with Bill Fleckenstein. Thank you so much for joining us, and stick with us. We've got a great show coming up, and I think you're going to get a lot out of this interview. You are listening to Know Your Risk Radio on 97.3 Cairo FM and AM 770 KTTH.
What does outside-the-box investing really look like? Schedule your free risk review with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management, and see a side-by-side comparison of your current portfolio versus one Zach would recommend. Schedule your free risk review at knowyourriskradio.com.
How do you know your finances and investments are positioned for a successful retirement? Well, what you don't know can hurt you. And that's why I'm so pumped up for Zach Abraham's Know Your Risk Roadshow, February 29th in Bellevue. Zach, you're taking Know Your Risk Radio on the road, and I love that.
Dory, we did this last year, and feedback was incredible. We go through our entire planning process, the same one you and Suzanne went through, and condensed it down to an hour. Then we dive into some great investing Q&A with the audience. It's what we're all about. Arm you with the resources and the information to make your retirement as successful as it can be.
And you can learn all about Zach's retirement planning and investment strategies at his Know Your Risk Roadshow, February 29th in Bellevue. Space will be limited for this free event, so make your reservation now at knowyourriskradio.com, knowyourriskradio.com.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
All right. Welcome back to the show. Thank you guys so much for joining us. And let's, without further ado, get to our guest interview today. We are lucky enough to be joined by a native son, Seattle resident, Mr. Bill Fleckenstein, longtime money manager and purveyor of Fleck Cap. And I am a subscriber to your daily market wrap service that you sign up for. And Bill, before we get going, I think it's a phenomenal source of information. It's something that we've integrated every day, reading your thoughts, getting your insights. How can people sign up for that service?
You just go to FleckensteinCapital.com and sign up.
Yeah.
And the price is $120 a year. I priced it that way in 04 when I started my own site. I started writing a column in 96 and I was, you know, I had it at various different sites along the way, but my reasoning was I did it essentially to try to help people after having come through the first bubble and then the second bubble. And so I wanted to price it in a way that anyone could afford it, but not so cheap that it was so stupid that it was, you know, a joke.
Right.
So anyway, that's why I priced it where I did.
Yeah.
So,
Money well spent, at least from my perspective, and I appreciate reading it every single day, and it's always nice.
Well, I think the thing that the average person might find more useful necessarily than the column is the Q&A and now 16 years worth of archives of questions and topics and stuff like that. So we've covered a lot of subjects over the years, and it's all there to be searched if anyone really cares.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I love reading the Q&A and I a lot of good color and a lot of good answers. You're a patient man. Well, I mean, you know, you can get a short fuse, I guess, like anybody else can. But you do a pretty good job answering questions. Even sometimes I read the question, I'm like, oh, Fleck, I don't think Fleck's gonna like this one. But you walk them through it, and there's some great data, some great information there. So I'd strongly suggest everybody to do what we've done, and I think that $120 is pretty cheap. It certainly hasn't reflected the depreciation of the dollar over the last 15 years or so.
No, that's true. I should have priced it in gold.
Yeah.
But then that wouldn't have achieved my objective, which was to try to make it available for anyone who cared.
Right, right. Well, hey, let's get right into it. We've been digging into the whole China thing and the coronavirus thing, and just got off the phone with an old friend of mine who's a logistics manager at Microsoft, global logistics manager, and spent about an hour on the phone with him giving me the breakdown. And from everything I can glean, you know, and you've been in this business. You know this forever. You know it a lot better than I do. This is a really interesting scenario because, Bill, this is the first issue I think that has popped up in the media in quite some time that isn't being sensationalized. I feel like it's being drastically underreported, and it's certainly not priced into markets. I wanted to get your thoughts and your observations from what you see going on and the impacts you see. Obviously, gold is responding, the dollar is responding. Kind of, if you could, give us your lay of the land, what you're seeing and how you're looking at things right now.
What I'm seeing, what do you mean where? I don't know exactly what you mean.
In relationship to this coronavirus issue, this impact it's having on production or, supply chains in Asia, how markets really to this point have been incredibly, just blowing it off. Like I said, we're seeing the impact in treasuries and gold and the dollar.
Right. I get the question. I think that people have concluded, stock bulls have concluded, that the Federal Reserve has their back. The Federal Reserve is not going to let anything bad happen. The Federal Reserve itself doesn't think it can do anything wrong. They do not think they can make a monetary mistake if they're making liquidity available or making or forcing rates lower. There's no amount of excess that they can do which would lead to trouble. That's what they think. And they're much more activists than they ever were before. I made a comment yesterday on my site that, the present day central bankers make Alan Greenspan look like Paul Volcker, and Greenspan was a complete fool. But these people are like crackheads. They looked into create more inflation. That was never in their mandate. They just made it up. Bernanke started it by saying, deflation was going to wreak havoc when that's not true. They use the word deflation as a code word to depression. And the bubbles are what lead to the depression like busts, not sound central banking. So they create these bubbles, and then we have the busts. But they've been in money printing mode now for 12 years, and everyone thinks that the Fed, not everyone, most people, and certainly the lion's share of investors think that the Fed knows what it's doing. And there's a crop of people that have been investing for the last 20 years. They don't know anything about financial history unless they've read about it. They haven't experienced anything except this monetary madness. So the coronavirus is a thing that can't be stomped out by money printing. And so I don't know that they make that distinction. They think the Fed's got their back, and the first response is to be macho because that's worked. And then when macho worked, then they figured, well, okay, it precipitated a bit of a panic whereby I think it kicked in FOMO. Oh, my God, if this doesn't make stocks go down, we know the Fed's going to bail us out. They're never going down. And you created this, last surge of buying panic in the face of really very consequential economic news. The supply chain disruption is real. We don't know how bad it's going to get. And we're not going to know until well after it's gotten to however bad it's going to get, because the data on the virus is so old. Everything we know today about where the virus is and what it's done, to the extent that we know much, is looking at 2 week old data at least, because of the period of time there is between when you can be carrying it and be infected and not know. So the economic disruption is going to be with us for a while, and I think that if at some point it weighs on the market enough to precipitate weakness, and that weakness can feed on itself, that will impact psychology, where guys have felt bulletproof. If that doesn't work, then you could get the downside to feed on itself for a bit, and it could get out of control easily because the structure is so brittle. If we'll have a crash at some point, I have no doubt about that. I don't know when. And then the Fed will ride to the rescue. Now, if we get a 10% correction, does the Fed try to ride to the rescue, and does it work or not? I don't know how all that's going to play out. But we're finally to a moment in time where we've got something that's going to be economically disruptive, when no economic disruption is really priced in, into the market at all. So it's the market's very pregnant at the moment, I would say.
Yeah, I couldn't. You said something that was literally right out of the mouth of that Microsoft's logistics manager. Like I said, just got off the phone with them about 40 minutes ago. And they said that what they think is happening right now is that nobody, they said something funny. They said, you know, we don't get me wrong. We like the fact that the stock, our stock's not getting hit. We just can't figure out why. And then he also said that, you know, this is going to take months for us. Everybody is acting as if there's going to be some kind of quick resolution. This is going to take months for us to figure out what the impact is. And right now it's getting worse by the day. And that literally, you just reiterated exactly what I was told from that logistics manager and just said, look, this is going to have impacts. If it stops right now, that's what he said. If it stops right now, we're going to feel the impacts of this into the end of this year. And it's absolutely going to hit our numbers. It already has. Markets flying blind. Mark, like you said, I just addicted to that Fed largesse, and they just think that the Fed's going to come to the rescue again. I don't really know how you can print over a virus or a pandemic. So,
but it's not. Psychology has been altered to the point where people really feel bulletproof in the stock market, and thus they have muscle memory. Well, bad news. God, this didn't matter. Well, if this doesn't matter, then nothing's going to matter.
Right.
And you know, I know the Fed's going to save. So perversely, you get this FOMO blow off right in the face of real trouble. And that's kind of how markets work in a perverse sense, especially at turning points. So this could be the end of the mania for all we know.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I was thinking the same thing. There's a sense of poetic justice to this. The timing of it, the dollar ramping, gold ramping, stocks catching that last euphoric bid in the coronavirus. But Bill, we got to take a quick break right here. Hard break coming up. Stick with us. We're just getting rolling with Bill Fleckenstein, and we're going to keep picking his brain as long as he'll let us. You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio on Cairo FM 97.3 and AM 770 KTTH.
This is Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham. Listen to Zach discuss key investment strategies across several asset classes, not just stocks and bonds. Get your free copy of Zach's new booklet, Common Sense Investing. Go to knowyourriskradio.com.
I have to tell you, what a relief for my wife and me when we got signed up for long-term care coverage. The more I learned about the fact that nearly 3 out of 4 of us will need some form of long-term care in our retirement, there are so many issues at play. For some people, they can't afford it and they become a burden on their friends and family. For others, you do have money set aside, but it wipes out everything that you've saved. And maybe most importantly, it's about having a plan so that all your children have to do is carry out your wishes. It's not a burden on them. And that's why I love the advice we got from Brian Ott and 525 Advisors. We started by going to one of Brian's free classes, and that's what I recommend you do to find out about all the different plans they offer. Brian does have a few classes coming up. Seats are limited, so sign up now at 525longtermcare.com. You'll get a free copy of Brian's book, too. Go to 525longtermcare.com, 525longtermcare.com.
This is Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham. Listen to Zach uncover the truth about the financial markets with simple and honest advice to help you plan for retirement. Get your free copy of Zach's new booklet, Common Sense Investing. Go to knowyourriskradio.com.
How do you know your finances and investments are positioned for a successful retirement? Attend Zach Abraham's Know Your Risk Roadshow, February 29th in Bellevue. Zach, tell us all about it.
Dory, we've taken our entire planning process, the same one you and Suzanne went through, and have condensed it down into a 1-hour class.
I love that.
We'll answer all the big questions. Do you need estate planning? Long-term care? When should you take Social Security? How much money do you need to retire? And we're also going to show everyone who attends how to protect their portfolio against loss while still growing their assets.
Don't miss the Know Your Risk Roadshow with Zach Abraham, February 29th in Bellevue. Sign up now at knowyourriskradio.com. You'll also get a free copy of Zach's booklet, Common Sense Investing. Space is limited for this free event. Reserve your spot now at knowyourriskradio.com. knowyourriskradio.com.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
Welcome back to the show. Thank you for sticking with us. And before we proceed, I want to remind everybody that we've got the Know Your Risk Radio Roadshow coming up next Saturday, February 29th, 10 a.m. at the Bellevue Hyatt. Again, guys, not a sales pitch. We just walk you through the same financial planning process we put Dory and his wife through, put all of our clients through, answer all the applicable questions to retirement. It's free of cost. Pastries and coffee is provided. We get you in and out in an hour. Not going to soak up a bunch of your time. I got three kids at home. Don't want to waste the whole weekend there. Do a Q&A session afterwards, but nobody asked to stay. Last time, funny enough, Q&A session lasted about 50% longer than the actual class. But you get a bunch of economic and finance nerds in the same room at the same time, and it can be trouble. Anyway, but you don't have to stay for that. Get you in and out in an hour. Bellevue Hyatt, 10 o'clock, next Saturday morning. Get your tickets, which are free. You got to sign up, though, because we got limited space at knowyourriskradio.com, or you can go right to bulwarkcapitalmanagement.com and sign up, and spaces are going quick. So hopefully we'll see you there. Now, let's get right back into our interview with Bill Fleckenstein. Going to take advantage of who's with us today. We're joined by Bill Fleckenstein, longtime money manager and purveyor of Fleckenstein Cap. It's at Fleck Cap is your Twitter handle. That's the one I follow. And then it's Fleckenstein Capital, right? Capital.com.
Correct.
Yes. And like I say, again, I'm not trying to blow smoke here, but I would strongly suggest for those of you out there that are into markets and economics, if you're listening to this show, I'm assuming that's the case. I would strongly recommend you going to FleckensteinCapital.com and signing up for his daily updates. And then, as he mentioned himself, make sure you read through the Q&A. It's extraordinarily cheap to get Bill's insights and thoughts every day, and it's something that we've built into our process on a daily basis. So anyway, getting back into the coronavirus issues, the one of the things that has really caught my eye and that I'm really watching here is, you know, if you got to, I mean, every country's like this to some extent at this point, but you see the debt Ponzi scheme that is the Chinese economy. And one of the things that history tells us, right, is that what ends the Ponzi scheme is typically not being found or being discovered. It's inflow stop for some type of reason. And I'm wondering if this might be the thing that finally really backs China into a corner. The other thing that manager told me is that, look, this issue that manager at Microsoft told me was that this issue is the quote unquote, the straw that broke the camel's back, that we are permanently moving sourcing. We've increased the amount of sourcing that we're moving outside of China. Everybody in big tech is doing the same thing, and we're not going back. This is going to really hurt that trade surplus that has enabled China to do all this monetary madness that they've done over the last, you know, 20 years or so. Do you think this could be the thing that precipitates? And I haven't heard you speak to this specifically, but do you think this could be the thing that really precipitates a yuan devalue and really cranks up issues for China, maybe even, you know, going to social unrest? Do you think this could be an existential threat for the CCP?
I don't know.
Okay, so
I don't know enough about China. I've always known that I couldn't know enough about China. The data is not good. I don't trust them. And so I don't have a big passion for trying to factor that into the equation. I think we know that their financial system is probably got any number of shaky entities. We don't know what the PBOC might do in a crisis. I don't think China is the key to the whole thing, other than the fact that this is where the virus broke out. And the virus and the shutting down of the global supply chain, so to speak, is probably enough to tip the world into recession. I mean, you know, lots of countries were weak already. And, you know, so I don't know that we need some Chinese, you know, exogenous event to kick off trouble. I mean, I think we got enough trouble brewing and starting to work on itself. A lot of time, those things only happen after the market's already started to go down for some other reason, you know, and then right. The financial stuff gets uncovered. So it's possible that it would be an accelerant. But if there's trouble right now, it's because of what the coronavirus has done to the world economy at a moment in time where it already was vulnerable. And if the stock market starts to get weak, then that'll turn the U.S. economy and the perception of it down too. So, again, there could be lots of rot in China. I wouldn't be surprised at all. I'm the wrong guy to ask. Kyle Bass is your expert on that subject, right? Not me. And if it is, it'll just be incremental, and it might be, you know, incremental in a big way. But I think if trouble's upon us, it's already here.
Right, right. Well, and our favorite pet rock, gold, the barbarous relic, it is really nicely right now. Miners still aren't, we're long miners, been long miners for quite some time and been adding. I'm not seeing the pop on the miner side, Bill. I've heard a lot of guys pontificate and bloviate about why we're not seeing miners. And this is a short period of time. I don't want to do the classic deal. 2 weeks of a trend, you know, we start extrapolating it. I don't want to go down that path, but, do you think the miners maybe have got a lot of catch up to play here, or a little bit of a, you know, they're not seem to catching the same type of bid or the same amplitude that gold is? What is your take on that?
Well, gold is being bought around the world. I'm sure if you're a saver in Germany and have an ounce of common sense, they've bought gold. I think a lot of Europeans generically probably have because of the insane policies over there. I mean, the ECB actually makes the Fed look halfway sober. And then there's the BOJ and, you know, everybody else. So the world has been buying gold, and I don't think U.S. citizens really have. It hasn't captured their imagination at all. When that starts to change, you'll probably see a better environment for gold miners. Of course, you don't know when that's going to change. And part of the problem is that these mining analysts, they all assume the price of gold is going to go down prospectively, right? We haven't gotten to a moment in time where people said, oh my God, the price of gold is not only going to stay where it is, but it's going to go up. So no one believes the last price on the board, you know, I mean, sorry, I shouldn't say no one, but at the margin, people think it's not going to stick. And so they don't factor in the current price of gold very much into what the companies are worth. They factor in some long-term price that they assume is going to be a few hundred dollars lower. And then gold goes up $100 and people say, oh my God, it's so frothy. And they never stop to think that, you know, there aren't any miners that are really gushing money. There's a few, but most of them, you know, they're all in cost of production is $1,000 or $1,200 or $800. But it's 1600, they're making money, but it's not like they're making obscene amounts of money. It's not like gold is a really stupid price. I think before this is over, that'll happen, and it'll get a lot, you know, it'll get much frothier. But for now, the gold stocks kind of get dragged along kicking and screaming for the most part.
Yeah, and it makes sense. It probably doesn't to me, just from being raised around the industry and, you know, being underground in mines since the age of five. So, you know, I've got a different perspective on it, but one of the things that interests me and that I find fascinating is this, you know, belief that, the issue with gold is when it starts running, you know, the mines are just going to crank up production and they'll bring new stuff online. And I'm sitting there going, guys, this isn't like building a new phone, right? This isn't like launching a new new set of headphones.
Well, anyone who would use that as an argument obviously doesn't know anything about the industry.
Yeah.
So it's really not worth listening to whatever else they have to say, because that's not how it works, as you're pointing out.
Yeah, and I think that, like you said, you look at, you know, all we deal with on a day-to-day basis is retail investors. And I got to tell you, I do not remember a time where I sat down and did a portfolio review. It had to be over a year ago where I saw somebody with any allocation to gold at all. And, you know, I'm looking at portfolios from all the advisory firms, right? Name, no one has an allocation. And it looks to me like we've got a perfect storm potentially brewing in gold prices on our hands. And, you know, if these currencies start falling under pressure, you know, the central banks have been net buyers, what, for the last 4 years now? And, you know, that flight into gold, I think, could be biblical. And the fact that this isn't getting allocated or built into the normal portfolio just baffles me.
Well, that's the reason why gold stock, that's the answer to why gold stocks don't do better.
There you go.
There's no real demand. There's no real demand in America.
Well, you don't need gold. You know, these were problems of yesteryear. We don't have to worry about it. You know, it's a barbarous relic. Go out and buy Tesla or space, you know, the Virgin Galactic Space Company or, you know, whatever. You know, just don't need it. All right. We got to take a quick break right there, but we'll be right back getting in to the rest of our interview with Bill Fleckenstein. And immediately after the break, we're going to talk about a little back and forth that yours truly had with a certain anchor on CNBC, and we're going to get Mr. Fleckenstein's opinion on that little debate. Hopefully he can discuss who was correct and who was wrong. But also, as a reminder, we got the road show coming up next Saturday, Bellevue Hyatt, downtown Bellevue, 10 a.m. Go to knowyourriskradio.com, borwickcapitalmanagement.com to get your tickets. And if you're getting out of the car, you got to go and you can't catch the rest of this interview. Remember, you can get all of our interviews in their entirety at mynorthwest.com. You can also just Google Know Your Risk Radio. Stitcher is a prominent podcast page that we're on. But if you just Google Know Your Risk Radio podcast, we're on a ton of different podcast sites, iTunes, all that stuff. So do that to hear the rest of the interview. And then you can actually sign up and you'll get live feeds every single week of the shows that we've done. But again, hang with us. We'll be right back to the conclusion of the interview with Mr. Fleckenstein. This is Know Your Risk Radio on 97.3 Cairo FM and AM 770 KTTH.
This is Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham. Listen to Zach discuss key investment strategies across several asset classes, not just stocks and bonds. Get your free copy of Zach's new booklet, Common Sense Investing. Go to knowyourriskradio.com.
How do you know your finances and investments are positioned for a successful retirement? Well, what you don't know can hurt you. And that's why I'm so pumped up for Zach Abraham's Know Your Risk Roadshow, February 29th in Bellevue. Zach, you're taking Know Your Risk Radio on the road, and I love that.
Dory, we did this last year, and feedback was incredible. We go through our entire planning process, the same one you and Suzanne went through, and condensed it down to an hour. Then we dive into some great investing Q&A with the audience. It's what we're all about. Arm you with the resources and the information to make your retirement as successful as it can be.
And you can learn all about Zach's retirement planning and investment strategies at his Know Your Risk Roadshow, February 29th in Bellevue. Space will be limited for this free event, so make your reservation now at knowyourriskradio.com, knowyourriskradio.com.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
Welcome back to the show. Thanks for sticking with us. This is Zach Abraham, and today we are interviewing Bill Fleckenstein, who's a purveyor of FleckensteinCapital.com and famed money manager. Another hot topic that I've been really dying to discuss with you, and I was looking forward for this interview. I got into a back and forth with Michael Santoli on CNBC, a brief back and forth, but I was making the point that the run-up since last September, I mean, you know, we look at last year, and it was an incredible year in the markets. But that I think the line in the sand was 29.30 on the S&P, and we'd bump up against it and we'd fall back down. And as soon as the Fed launched repo, that we busted through to all time highs, and then, you know, rode triumphantly into the end of the year. And there's this all these, you know, arguments and these, you know, brilliant esoteric minds, economic minds coming out and saying that there is no transmission mechanism between repo and equities, and equities, and repo isn't driving equities. And I wanted to hear your thoughts on this, because my argument to Santoli, and correct me if I'm wrong, and if I'm wrong, I'll take it. But I said, yeah, maybe the repo money isn't directly going into stocks, but anytime the Fed's pumping liquidity into a market at all, it's the equivalent of selling volatility, and that alone is going to lift equity prices. What are your thoughts on this whole repo has no impact on stock prices?
It's nonsense. Do they think the QE had no impact on stock prices as well? I don't know what Santoli thinks. If he will say, well, yeah, we know QE took up stock prices. I mean, the Fed will even tell you that. They'll admit to that. They're trying to pretend that the repo is not QE. They went out of their way to say that, which is completely ridiculous. The reason the market did what it did, QE3, which we all know was very powerful, was about $450 billion. The repo facility addition has been in that neighborhood of $400 to $450 billion. The difference was QE3 took place over the course of a year. This repo, what I like to call monetization number four, took place in about 90 days. So we did a year's worth of QE in a quarter. Now, the reason they say it's not monetization is because when they would go in and buy bonds, they were buying them with the intent to hold them. When they're doing a repo, they're doing it with the intent of not rolling it over in perpetuity. They'll roll it over a few times, X number of times over the course of groups of months, and then they think they're going to stop. So because their intention is not to do this permanently, then they try to say it's not QE. You know, taking a shot of an addicting drug and say, well, I don't intend to get addicted. I don't mean to get addicted, so I won't. You know,
yeah.
In other words, the end result is the same regardless of what the intention was. So anyone who claims, like Neil Kashkari and some of these other people, that that's not why stocks are going up is either lying or stupid. Take your pick. Because that's exactly why stocks went up. And the fact that you, I mean, we could talk about any monetization scheme. We can go back to the 80s or the 90s when the Fed would endeavor to lower rates and they would go in and buy bills, which means they would inject liquidity into the financial system. And the market ultimately went up because the money works its way through the system and it changes psychology and lots of things. You can't give an exact ankle bone connection to the, you know, leg bone to the hip bone, that, you know, you can't do that, but that's what happens. It's not debatable. And if anyone who wants to deny it is not worth talking to because they don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah, no, it's been a puzzling argument to me. But I always get fascinated when we get into the late parts of these moves and how so many people spend so much time trying to justify what's going on rather than looking at the forest for the trees and going, listen, if QE or non-QE or whatever it is, it didn't boost asset prices, then why would they do it in the first place? They don't
even understand the ramifications of Dodd-Frank and the needs of the Treasury dealer community. When the budget deficit exploded in the fall, the demand for funds to be able to repo and have hold cash for all the bonds they had to buy, and the timing, exchanges that have taken place meant that there wasn't enough liquidity to do what they had to do. But they have to bid on the bonds and they have to finance their inventory. So repo rates spiked up to 8%, 9%, 10%. They try to stop the repo facility, it'll happen again. So it's going to turn out to be a quasi, if they do something else. It's also a consequence of their IOER. And the way they target that instead of the funds rate, it's all part of the post 08 financial system that the Fed has created. They don't even know how that works. That's what this shows. But anyway.
Yeah. And that's the thing. And again, I will fully admit I am not a repo expert. I am not a bank balance sheet expert.
But, well, you don't have to be a repo expert. You don't need to know that. I mean, it is what it is. I mean,
right.
They injected that much money in the financial system.
Well, and that was my point. I mean, if this is just a short-term funding, a quote-unquote short-term funding bottleneck, like they're all talking about, what short-term funding bottleneck takes 5.5 months and $500 billion to resolve?
But that's not really the issue. I mean, you're talking about what they're trying to describe it as. The fact of the matter is it is a monetization, and it's only not a monetization when they stop. And when they try to stop, they're going to find out that they can't, just like they couldn't stop when they unwound QE for about a year. You know, they couldn't get to the tail end of unwinding QE, and then they had to cut rates again, even though last year they're going to hike them. And if they try to end the repo facility, they're going to find out the same thing happens. And so maybe we have to get to that moment in time before people understand, oh, it really is a permanent facility.
Yeah. A question that I wanted to ask you, and I had written here in my notes, because it's something that I've been thinking about now for quite some time. And I think you and I have similar outlooks on the Fed. I puzzles me how people don't have a similar, but you know, a similar outlook. But that's fine. Do you think you get a Jay Powell in there, right? And I think a lot of people were thinking, okay, he's going to bring some more sanity. I didn't really think he'd be able to, just because of you know, the setup and what had come before. Do you think the Fed's at a point now where, even if they were rational thinkers, that they can't do the right thing, that they can't sit back and let things play themselves out because they've done it so long that now they're married to it? I mean, one of the thoughts that goes through my mind is I don't think these people are stupid. Maybe they are, but I don't think they're stupid.
They are stupid. Okay. Wait a minute. What's your definition of stupid? You do the same thing over and over, and it keeps having the same results, and you keep doing it just because you don't understand the cause and effect of what you do doesn't mean you're not stupid, because it keeps having the same outcome.
Yes.
I mean, they had the stock bubble, and then they had the bad policies to bail it out, gave us a real estate bubble, which almost imploded the financial system because the Fed didn't do its job of regulating the banks and what they were doing from an investment standpoint, in addition to the monetary mistakes they made. And now they're doing the same thing, and they're claiming that we want more inflation. We, you know, they ease of the drop. So they are stupid. Now, can they pass tests? Sure, I'm sure they can pass all kinds of complicated economics and accounting tests. But they don't know anything about how financial markets work.
Yeah, yeah.
And they know nothing about financial history. Bernanke claims to have studied, used to claim he'd studied the Depression, wrote his paper about it. He drew the wrong conclusion. He decided we had the Depression because the Fed didn't do enough to stop it, when it was the bubble that the Fed helped create in the 26-27 that led to the last couple of years that led to the crash. It's sort of like the insanity of the last couple of years here in America in 2018-2019. So I think they are stupid, not necessarily in an academic sense, but you've probably met lots of people that are very smart that don't have any common sense. That's kind of the way to think about it.
I'm just wondering from the angle of, you know, if we, you know, I know what, well, I've got an idea of what I think I'd see you do if you were placed at the head of the Fed. But I'm just wondering if they're looking at all of, you know, their surroundings and looking at the current financial environment and coming to the conclusion that even if we know that this isn't the right thing to do, right, doing the right, we're so far off the path. We've got a market dependent.
Let me try to answer your question in a way that I think might make some sense. They're not going to ask that question. They're not self-aware. They don't know that they can make mistakes by being too easy. They only think they can make mistakes by being too tight. So consequently, they're going to do what they do. Now, if the question is, could anybody fix this given what they've done? I think that's what you're really asking. The answer is no.
Yeah.
They won't know that they're trapped, and there's no path out that even would hold a modest amount of pain. There's only really serious pain. They long ago passed the point of no return where they could somehow undo this. So they don't know what they're doing. They don't have any idea the ramifications of this stuff. If somehow you reconstituted the members of the Fed and picked your favorite 8-10 smart Wall Street guys and understood all this stuff, could they save the day? No. Because basically we're at a situation where the heroin junkie has to go to detox.
Right.
And it's not going to be fun. It's going to be really painful. Now we come out the other side, we'll all be better off. Our kids, our grandkids, et cetera, they will be better off. But we're going to be in for a world of hurt over a 5-year period. I mean, no one even talks about the size of the budget set deficit anymore. I mean, and if we have a recession, could it be 2 trillion? I guess the numbers are so big you can't even fathom them. And it hasn't mattered because the central banks have monetized so much debt. And then we've got all the crappy debt that's in ETFs and, you know, BBB paper masquerading as A paper. And so the financial, you know, the amount of bankruptcies and things like that, and the hits to pension plans because all the private equity money. I mean, if you start peeling back the onion, of what having to pursue a sound monetary policy would do. I mean, it would be blood curdling. And I mean, the pain is going to come. The only question is, how does it come and in what form? Is it, you know, brutal and over 3 to 4 years? Is it less brutal, but it's over a decade? I mean, part of the reason why the Obama recovery was punk was because the policies weren't very good. Money printing doesn't work. And the governmental policies that administration pursued were slightly anti-capitalistic. Trump's flipped the deal and it's gone the other way. And he's helped fan the animal spirits with, you know, all this talking about stock market and the Fed and all this stuff. So now you've got the worst possible setup for a moment in time when we could have some economic turmoil. Nobody can fix this without a lot of pain.
All right. Due to time constraints, we got to cut the interview off right there. But we do go further. And if you want to hear the end of it, which I strongly, or if you missed the beginning of it, you can hear the interview in its entirety at, Know Your Risk Radio Podcast. You can just Google that. We're on Stitcher, so you can just Google Know Your Risk Podcast Stitcher. You can also get our podcast on MyNorthwest.com. And honestly, guys, if you just Google Know Your Risk Radio, a bunch of different pod site or podcast pages are going to come up. You can get us on there. And I strongly suggest you hear the rest of Mr. Fleckenstein's thoughts. But anyway, we got to cut it off there. Have a fantastic weekend. As always, we'll be back next week and doing the roadshow. Roadshow, downtown Bellevue, Bellevue Hyatt, 10 o'clock next Saturday morning. It's a great time. Don't miss it. Seats are going fast. There's some space available, but not just a sales pitch. It's filling up a lot faster than we thought it would. So hopefully you'll get your seats. Anyway, hope to see you next week. If not, we'll get to you on the show. Have a great weekend. This is Know Your Risk Radio on 97.3 Cairo FM and 770 KTTH.
Thanks for listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Schedule your free risk review with Zach Abraham now at knowyourriskradio.com. Zach will be back with more Know Your Risk Radio next Saturday at noon on 97.3 Cairo FM and AM 770 KTTH.
Opinions expressed in this program are for general information purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or any specific security. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor prior to investing. Any past performance discussed during this program is no guarantee of future results. Any indices referenced for comparison are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. As always, please remember investing involves risk and possible loss of principal capital. Please seek advice from a licensed professional. Bulwark Capital Management is an investment advisor representative of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.